Hello, listeners. This is producer John. Open Pike Night is going to be at Trek Long Island 2024. From May 31st to June 2nd, Cameron and myself, producer John, will be in the Big Apple living long and prospering. We'll be hosting a panel. We'll be giving out stickers. We will have our microphones. Be sure to follow Open Pike on social media and subscribe to openpike.substack.com because we also will be giving away some Trek Long Island weekend passes. Trek Long Island is May 31st to June 2nd at the Hyatt Regency in Hopog, New York.
This is Tom Pulce.
And I'm Kay Hanley, and you are rocking out to Open Pike Night.
It's a kind of magic.
Is this thing on? Hello, hello.
Welcome to Open Pike Night, the Strange New Worlds podcast where your personal logs are the prime directive. I am your host this week, Jesse Bailey, and with me in the studio, a man who always conducts himself well in interviews, host of Green Shirt, A Newbie's Trek, Through the Next Generation, Cameron Harrison.
Choo-choo, it's all that training I do. Right? I got the pun, right?
Yeah, I believe you nailed it. That's what they call that in the business. Now, unfortunately, our producer, John T. Bolds, is busy singing sea shanties this week. But thankfully, our forte is our wonderful chorus of callers who are all about that space. Our guests this week are the Kay Hanley and Tom Pulce, the songwriters behind the music of Subspace Rhapsody. Kay and Tom, welcome to Open Pike Night.
I'm still reeling from We're All About That Space.
I'm still reeling from the meta sea shanty call out. That was good. That was deep. You went right there. Thank you. And it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're really excited to get the people behind the songs of Star Trek's first musical, for
you
sure.
You have that.
Yeah. This is something that a lot of fans never expected to happen, and when it was announced, I'm sure you're quite aware, a lot of fans were like, excuse me? Mm-hmm. And this inspired some of the liveliest discussion that we've had on Open Pike Night all season. There were people on both sides of the aisle, but there was nobody that really seemed to hate this. And, you know, maybe those people just don't go to the effort to call in, which isn't surprising, but we heard basically universal praise from our callers on this episode. And it's not just that. It's that this music has become part of people's lives. And we are actually lucky enough to have audio proof of that. So before we get into our calls, we do have one very special guest who a caller of ours just happened to hear singing to herself. And we have to share this with you guys.
Okay.
Why are we singing? Apology is the most important thing. I appear to be singing most usually. Chewing. Taking at the helm, the pilot seat is my bed. Me and the field are so bounded. My system steady and pretending ready.
Oh my god! I love him or her. Oh,
that is our listener Abby's 5-year-old daughter just playing with her toys.
Oh my god! Oh my god! So she's not even trying. She's just like she knows.
This is not.
It's in
this
there.
This was not urged on. This was not performing. No, yeah.
Everything was worth it. Every minute.
I mean,
worth it.
We can just quit the business now,
right?
Oh, did it.
God, all the feels just happened for me. That was very sweet. Very, very sweet. Thank you for sharing.
Well, there's more because she sings another song, but we'll save that one for the end. We'll close out on that.
We'll bookend
it. To the very end, folks.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. Well, let's leave Star Trek for just a moment. We're going to dive deep into Subspace Rhapsody, but we do like to go back into your history. So, both of you, we can start with Tom because you're on the left on my screen. How did you get the musical bug? When did you start thinking music might be your life, your career?
Oh, wow, we're going all the way there. Okay. Well, you know, it was very, very early for me. I started, you know, I did that thing where I was taking out pots and pans at 3 or 4 and making a racket. And at, you know, 4 or 5, well, I think at the end of at Christmas, you know, around 4 or 5, I got this little fake kit, drum kit that had like paper heads. And that night, Christmas Eve, I broke through all the heads, and I was elated initially, and then I was heartbroken within 5 minutes because I destroyed the drum set. And then my parents got me a real drum set during that break, and started off playing drums, and then went to guitar and bass and all the rhythm instruments. So I've been playing since I was a kid. I knew this was my path really, really early on.
All right. And I'm sure it was a long process, but was there a moment where you were like, oh, I made it. I'm doing this as a profession now. Like, I am a musician.
Well, there are several moments where you may fool yourself with that sentence, but you quickly realize the hammer of life shows you that that was all for naught. So I'll let you know when I feel like I've made it, but it hasn't happened yet.
That's fair.
No, generally speaking, I feel like I have plenty to learn, I have plenty to do, and I am thankful and grateful for all the things that have happened so far. But the whole mm-hmm. made it business, I make a living playing music, sure, but generally speaking, no, I don't think like that.
You don't want to get too comfortable.
No, 100%.
What about you, Kay? How did you get the bug?
Boy. Well, my mom made me take piano lessons starting at about the age of 6 or 7, because I was a good reader. So, and we had a piano in our house, and my mom always wanted to be a person who could, anyway, she made me take piano lessons. I had no interest whatsoever. I was classically trained by this very old man named Mr. Gellatly, and I was terrible at the piano. Like, I had no gift for it whatsoever. And I learned how to read just sort of through, it was kind of just through a war of attrition. It got in there. But that wasn't how I would learn the songs every week. How I would learn the songs every week, I came to find out later, this was actually my gift, was Mr. Gellatly would play the piece for me. And I was supposed to, be reading along with the notes, and then I would learn it. I would practice it every day and then come back and play it for him the next week. And I would memorize the melody of what he was playing. And I wouldn't read a note. I had it memorized. I heard it once and it was in my head, and I would be able to learn it just by listening and kind of feeling it out. So I wouldn't have to bother with all the reading. Just took so much effort,
Sure.
So, I always sang with my mom at mass, and, my mother at one point got, a folk group showed up to play at the noon mass on Sundays at St. Greg's. And it was like 3 people and a guitar, and they sang like Peter, Paul, and Mary. And we were all just like, whoa. And my mom was obsessed, and she got a 12-string guitar and she learned how to play it. And I started like harmonizing with her. And I would say that's probably when I didn't know that, being a musician was a career. So that wasn't ever in my head. Mm-hmm. But I definitely like harmonies and melodies and lyrics. And I just was really, really into that. I went to school to be a writer. I thought I would go to school to be a writer. My cousin Greg was starting a band when I was like a senior in high school, and he was like, hey, you want to be he knew that I sang with my mom at like mass and stuff. So he was like, hey, do you want to come down and be the backup singer in my band? And I was like, yeah, I want to come down and be the backup singer in your band. So I did. And then a couple of years later, after being the bass player was like the singer, Greg wrote all the songs. And I was just like, la, 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 la. And a few years later, we showed up to rehearsal together, Greg and I, and Greg had like a new song written and he was going to show it to the band. He started playing the chords and like he had some lyrics written down. I was looking at the page and as he's playing the chords, all of a sudden this like melody starts, like got started, like I started making up a melody and I was like, what's that? And I was reading the note, reading the words, singing a melody over his chord progression. And I was like, oh my God, I think we just wrote a song. And that was the end. I was just hooked writing songs. So I've been doing it ever since. It took me about six, you know, we got our record deal and letters to Cleo in like 95. So that was like the last time I waited a table. But, you know, I did say to my mom just last week, I was like, so I guess this is my job now. I don't think I'm going to have to find another job. This is 30 years so later.
Go back to waiting tables.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to have to wait tables anymore ever yet.
Well, who were some of your inspirations? Who were you listening to back then through your like teens and 20s?
Well, early on it was classic rock, you know. I'm a first generation Italian American boy, so a lot of Italian songs at the dinner table, singing with the fam. We got we're in the 80s and the metal's happening. I start getting into that for a second, and then I sort of tapped out of the metal and I got really into jazz, like bebop jazz, and really getting into that a lot. Went to New England Conservatory to play jazz, then to Berkeley to play jazz. And then around 90, 91, people my age started making music I liked again. So I got right back in it and started playing, you know, rock and roll again, playing original music for people my age in clubs. And while still playing, you know, jazz and stuff, and that, you know, eventually turned into my introduction to Letters to Cleo and to Kay and to that whole family. And that's where we came together and started making music in our 20s.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Kay?
The first album I ever bought was, I heard This One's For You by Barry Manilow on AM radio, on my dad's AM radio. And I think I was like seven. And I was obsessed with that song. So I saved up my like 15 cents a week allowance to buy Barry Manilow Live, the double album. That was the first record I ever bought. And then kind of like Tom, like every Saturday was the Irish Hour on WROR. And I just knew every single Irish song that there was to know. And got into, you know, super into disco. Really into disco. And then
I'm learning a lot.
And then I'm still into disco. It's like my favorite music. Like 80s disco is like, that's my. Then I was really into, we didn't have punk rock in my neighborhoods, but we did have hip hop. So like I was a break dancer and like listened to like all hip hop and Run DMC was, I knew all the words to every rap song, Eric B and Rakim, EPMD, and did a brief stop off at metal for a second. And then, but really only Ozzy and like,
yes,
like Diary of a Madman.
Oh my God. Every like, song.
Wasn't that record just like, hey, oh my, still, every song,
every song,
every song. There. Tom,
how have we not talked about this?
I don't know.
I can play all. We're gonna do
take a minute.
Duo.
Take a moment.
I know that would be so fun to like do other. A cover, like do that album.
Yes, please.
You heard it here, folks.
and then my sister, who was, it was really weird because like I was like a big hair cheerleader, and my sister was like a science fair nerd and like listen to all this cool, like she was the first person in our neighborhood to like turn everybody on to U2 and like The Alarm. And She came home with Mita's Murder, and she played by the Smiths, and she played me How Soon Is Now. My head exploded. I got rid of all my blue eyeliner and frosted pink lipstick and Love's Baby Soft, bought a bunch of black clothes, and like 6 months later, I was in a band.
Nice. Perfect. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I love the variety we just heard there, which might explain a lot about both the music in Subspace Rhapsody and your careers, which are very detailed and long and varied. And we can make multiple episodes just about each of your careers. So
please, no.
We're going to kind of try to speed our way through there to get up to Subspace Rhapsody. So I'm just going to list some things that popped out to me, some projects and credits you both have. And just tell me the first thing, whether it's a word, a couple words, a sentence, like what pops in your head. I know Letters to Cleo is huge, and I'm not going to make you boil that down to a sentence. So how about just Dangerous Type from the Kraft soundtrack, which I grew up on?
Oh, the Chris Applebaum directed the video for that. That's the best video we ever made. I loved it. It was so much fun.
Nice. All right. Tom, Bob Dylan, who you worked with.
Oh, man. Describing my production with colors. That was the communication through his manager. Yeah. So yeah, I've done a couple things with him, and they're all, wild and fun.
Wild and fun. I like it. Okay. Kay, we may have to take a moment here for a question from Jesse's wife, but 10 things I hate about you.
Oh, I mean, do you have an hour?
I've got one sentence.
Yes.
One sentence. Sat next to Heath Ledger in hair and makeup for 2 days for the rooftop scene, and the day of the rooftop scene, and he was freaking out, so excited to be in his first major motion picture in the United States.
Wow.
Sure. Australian accent thick at that point?
Yes. Yeah.
He hadn't. Yeah.
Yeah, when what Cameron is referring to is when I told my wife who we were interviewing tonight, she like lit up and asked if I was joking. She's like, "Are you serious?" And I was like, "Yes, I'm pretty sure I mentioned this." And she said, "No, you said you were interviewing the songwriters from Strange New Worlds." And I was like, "Well, that's who they are." And she's like, "No, honey, that's not who they are. Oh my God!" And she walked into the other room and immediately called her sister. And she was like, "Guess what my husband is doing?" And it was like,
"Oh my God!"
It was a huge moment for this podcast in our household. Yeah. It was very cool.
It was like when you two just discovered that you had similar music taste. There, it was Jesse discovering about his wife.
Yeah,
amazing.
And she was like, she's suddenly like, "Okay, maybe I'll watch that episode with you." And I was like, "This is it, you guys. This is the beginning of a new era." So yes, I don't know what to say on her behalf other than thank you. She has you guys on her daily playlist.
Oh, like, that's awesome.
You're a staple in her life.
Oh, yeah, I'm so happy to hear that. Thank you.
All right, Tom, Bowling for Soup.
Bowling for Soup. It was fun mixing for them. And Jarrett is a hoot.
I buy it. I believe that. Kay, Parks and Recreation.
Was so shy to be on the set with Jeff Tweedy. And I saw him at Crafty at like 7 in the morning. And it took me until 9 p.m. to finally finally make someone introduce me to Jeff Tweedy from Wilco.
Tom, Stephen Colbert presents Tuning Out the News.
Yeah, I got to write a theme song for that one, and that was a blast.
That sounds like a blast, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Kate, Doc McStuffins.
The doc is in, and she'll fix you up. If you're a toy, then you're in luck. It's okay, don't be afraid. The doc really knows her stuff.
Hey!
That was my first real job in animation as a series composer, and I have never looked back. I've been doing it ever since.
And as a father of a six-year-old girl, I have to say thank you. I many of those are on repeat in our house, and they are all very catchy and enjoyable to listen to, which is not the case for all the shows my kids watch.
Thank you. We do. We write for the parents. I don't write children's songs.
Well, as we heard, many children enjoy the music the parents like, so keep doing it.
Right.
Tom, NCIS.
NCIS. I have been asked to write so many different songs in create music for those guys from every genre. You're getting more than you asked for. You asked for a word, then a sentence. Now we're going into paragraphs. But they were, you know, if I recall correctly, that was one of the first shows where I started in earnest doing music for them. That wasn't score. It was like they needed special stuff. And I got to write several pieces of music with their actors for their soundtrack albums. So that was sort of like an on-ramp into music for television. You are picking out some rando things. It's freaking crazy. But yeah, that was like an on-ramp into this gig. Yeah.
You've got like 100, it says 132 episodes on IMDb.
A couple, two, three.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, you talked a bit about this, Kay, but I got to say my favorite one, Vampirina.
Oh, wow. Well, we thought we were a shoe-in for series composer on Vampirina, and this Broadway team came in and like stole the job out from under us. It was the same creator as Doc McStuffins. And I was like, I mean, I could not believe that we lost that gig. So it's Diamond and Kumin, this Broadway duo, writing duo from New York. And I know them now and I love them, but oh my God, I was crushed. But we did get to write all the songs for Vampirina's band, the Ghoul Girls.
So that's what you did. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Coming to the end, Tom, my wife's favorite, Jane the Virgin.
Oh my God. Don't have sex, Jane. There were so many crazy songs they had me write. They had me write so many crazy songs for that one. A lot of the songs were in Spanish. I believe I sung one of them. In Spanish. That was a blast. That was, I think, 4, 5, or 6 seasons of them throwing at me every possible thing. You know, it was one of those shows where the characters on the show sang. I got to write a lot of music for that show, and the asks were bonkers. Not quite as bonkers as a Star Trek musical, but bonkers nonetheless.
Good preparation.
Yeah.
All right. And then, yeah, Kay, to finish on just one of my favorites, you know, I mean, Star Trek was not the first giant IP you walked into. And I will leave, you know, the Shakespearean cinematic universe aside with 10 things I hate about you. But Archie Comics, Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah.
Loved that movie when it came out. Love it now. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, my God. Again, do you have an hour? The best, that job literally changed my life in every conceivable way. I co-wrote 2 of the songs on that, but I wasn't hired for my writing. I was hired to be a singer, which has never happened before and not happened since. I got my first good review in the Village Voice because, you know, Letters to Cleo didn't get like cool press or anything. Like we were never like the cool band. So Village Voice gave me my first good review for Josie and the Pussycats. And that was kind of cool.
Awesome. Well, we do have a listener question that he wrote in for this one. Jason from the It's Not That Bad podcast asks, will there be a day when you get together to do a Josie concert?
We did.
Yes.
We did a couple of years ago.
Nice.
We did it at the Ace Hotel in downtown LA. And for the, I think it was the 20-year anniversary of, it was like right before the, it was in 2019, I guess. And It was a screening of the movie and then a Q&A with Rachel E. Cook, Tara Reid, and Rosario Dawson and Deben Harry, the directors. And in between that, we performed five songs from Josie. And one of them was Pretend to Be Nice, written by Adam Schlesinger, one of my favorite songwriters in the world, Tom. And, you know, they worked together on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And we were playing that song and I was like, oh, I should call Adam. He should come play it with us. But Adam was like really shy and like kind of like a little, just not the kind of guy who's like, yeah, let's rock, you know? So I almost didn't call him because I thought he wouldn't want to do it. But then I was like, no, I gotta, because it's the best people. It's just the fan favorite. So I called him and I was like, hey, you want to do this thing? And he was like, oh my God, definitely. And he like came down and rehearsed with us and came and played the show. And then, he died of COVID like very early in the pandemic. And I'm so glad that I thought better of not calling him because like I didn't want to bother him. I, you know, like it just kind of reminds me to bother people, dare to bother people because people want to be bothered. I mean, in a certain way.
Yeah, I was going to say that's actually the open pike night promise. We promise to bother people. So
okay, wow.
Well, speaking of that, let's, Jesse, why don't you take over and talk about Star Trek a little bit?
Yeah, so this is a Strange New Worlds podcast. It's sometimes hard to remember that by the time we get to this section of the show, but I do have to ask, did either of you have a relationship with Star Trek before this gig? Let's start with you, Tom, and then we'll go to UK.
Okay, so my relationship with Star Trek is from a very early kid until, you know, my late teens, the original Star Trek. Dabbled in Picard a little bit, and then that was that. But I've always come back, and, you know, I would always go back and watch reruns of the original Star Trek. Not so much Picard, but I definitely just went back. There was just something about it. It's like one of those things, like it's like the Brady Bunch or Gilligan's Island or when Grease comes on. If I'm flipping channels and it's there, I'm like, all right, that's it. I'm going to watch it. You know, it's one of those. So that was my relationship with it, was with the original cast. And so I knew some of that canon, and it certainly helped with Strange New Worlds being a prequel and several of the characters, you know, are in it.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Kay, how about you?
I wasn't a Trekkie when we started this gig. I am now. So my experience was kind of limited to, when it was on Channel 38 WSBK in Boston when I was a kid, and my dad loved the original Star Trek. So I have like very fond memories of like having dad time in front of the TV watching Star Trek with him. And, I've seen the different iterations of the show. My husband is a Trekkie. My nephew and my sister are like, I have Trekkies in my life. But I was pretty limited in my deep knowledge. I didn't have any deep knowledge of canon. Just I knew the big basics.
Very cool. That mirrors a lot of, I know that mirrors the story of a lot of our listeners. A lot of people start with Star Trek as a family activity because, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, I don't know if I want to watch, my wife calls it grown-ups talking when she was a kid. She's like, why do I want to watch grown-ups talking? And, you know, it's like, yeah, that's totally fair. But yeah, a lot of people's first exposure was through their family. So with that, Did you start having like friends come out of the woodwork as Trekkies once they found out you had this job?
Well, I certainly found out who they were. You know, some DMs happened like, whoa, what's happening right now? You know, yes. And so a lot of them revealed themselves to me. And I had no idea that it was going to affect them in the way that it did. So, yeah.
a lot of the people we've talked to have had that experience where like, oh, I had no idea these friends were into Star Trek until I was in it. Yeah. And then.
And we were not allowed to talk about it. So we couldn't really like, we couldn't like post on like social media or anything like that, that we were working on Star Trek. So we had to, you know, when we were writing, like in the early days, you know, I definitely like was like calling my nephew and asking him for like cliff notes on, you know, certain characters, certain vernacular and stuff like that. But when the episode came out, I was shocked by the people who like were on my Instagram, like saying, this is my, you know, and that Strange New Worlds was their favorite Trek series. And I couldn't believe, it was very surprising to me, the people who are Trekkies. Cause I know all like the Star Wars fans in my life don't make it a secret. It's like, you can't shut them up.
Yeah.
But Trekkies.
The Trekkies keep it on the DL. Yes. Yeah.
They're more subtle about it.
This is making me so happy.
And by the way, no offense, Angie, if you're listening to this, I didn't mean you. Yeah. Or maybe I did.
Yeah, she did.
Angie's one of our biggest listeners, actually. So hi, Angie. I'd heard elsewhere that you leaned on your nephew a lot for help with the songwriting. Did you have to sign an NDA or anything? Did you have to promise to keep it on the DL for a year?
He didn't need to be told that. He was so protective of this thing. I mean, my nephew Brendan was like, as I've said before, like after he got over the fact that he was vaguely just like horrified that they were letting Auntie KK anywhere near Star Trek. he felt very protective of the fact that it was happening. He wasn't like, he was very curious about like, wow, this is very, and he had not been watching Strange New World. So actually this got him to start watching it. He didn't need to sign an NDA. He would never.
Family secret.
He was so, yeah.
Sure.
He could keep a secret.
Oh, she
went to it. Keep it secrets.
So I know as professional musicians, it's your job to deliver. But did entering Star Trek and doing the first Star Trek musical, was there extra pressure, different pressure? Did you feel different taking on this task?
Yes.
Knowing or maybe not knowing about the fan base?
Well, I think both of us knew, you know, the fan base situation and knew that this was a show with deep, deep, completist fans. And we took this very, very seriously. And I mean, I think initially when I found out that this was a potential thing, when we discussed the possibility of a Star Trek musical, my head exploded, just like everybody's head exploded when they found out a musical was happening. It was a moment of pause. It was like, pause button, breathe, come back to it. Come on. It's such an audacious cuckoo pants idea. I mean, come on. Yes, all the things. Yeah.
Oh, was there any hesitation in taking it on because of that? Or did you just jump right and be like, oh, I have to be a part of this?
No. The only hesitation was the initial acknowledgement of the cray cray. Then you need to crush this if you're going to do it. Like, you cannot. This has to be everything, because it's going to be taken to task. And, you know, my goal is going to be to, you know, convert some of these diehard Trekkies into being open to, you know, allow a musical to happen in that world. And, you know, we can go to some Reddit threads and understand that there are some people who will never be converted, but that's okay. All that's expected. But, you know, the short answer is, It was an audacious thing. There was only trepidation in that I knew that it had to kill. We just had to kill this thing. So
that's really cool. We heard from more than three people at least on our episode covering this that went, you know, I'm not a musical fan, so I wasn't excited for this. I think I might be a musical fan now. Or, you know, normally I set a really high bar and I was not prepared to like this, and it turns out I love it and I've downloaded it all.
So
you have absolutely achieved that goal. And amazing. Since you just are so good at telling this story, Tom, it feels like you already answered our first listener question. So what we'll do is we'll play that question and then we'll toss it to you, Kay, and you can give us your reaction.
All right.
This is Zoe Richardson, captain of the USS Cinema and host of Backlick Cinema, the podcast. I'm really glad that you were able to get Kay Hanley and Tom Polte over to the show. They made such wonderful music, and I don't know what questions to ask. I guess the main question I would ask is, when you are approached to write a musical for Star Trek, what was your reaction? Was it like, Star Trek? Because that would be my reaction. And I just love all the music and the different styles of music and how it was both new and familiar at the same time. It's one of my favorite musicals now. I gotta tell you, me and the crew of the cinema, we really loved that. And we was trying to find the anomaly that allowed that to happen. But instead of having the musical dimension bleed out into our universe, we were trying to send an excursion into a musical universe. The problem was that it was a death metal universe. And at the end of the day, there were people drinking blood. There were ritual sacrifices. And I had a stellar cartographer bite the head off a bat, and we definitely had to get out of there. But the crew got back. We all got back safely. Everything's fine. I just want to say, good work, guys. Great episode. Richardson out.
I feel like we just...
Wow, we went somewhere.
It was a journey.
And there was like a weird Aussie thing in there with the head, the bat. Yeah.
I know,
thing.
With the biting off the...
He always creates this audioscape when he calls in, does Captain Zoe. He's very immersive.
Yeah. I was mesmerized by that. And then all of a sudden we were like in some narrative. I did not see that coming. Okay, so the question, so that would, it starts with Tom, because he's a staff composer. And he always forgets to tell this part, so, and I always have to cut him off. So I'm going to start this by saying that Tom is a staff composer at CBS Television. And so he was in a position to, Tom, take it away.
Okay, so yes, I am a staff composer, staff producer for Paramount at this point. CBS now is Paramount,
right.
In all of Paramount. So basically, during COVID, I think this would be 22 January, I was taking a Zoom call to discuss something with the showrunners. So I get to the Zoom, they mention, hey, you know, we're thinking about doing a musical. And yeah, as mentioned earlier, head explosion, pause, back in it. Okay. And they wanted to know, well, logistically, what does that mean? How long does it take? You know, how do we find the people? You know, how long do we need? So it was January. They were shooting in May. Nothing was written. We basically just talked about timeline. Like, how long did I think it would take to write 6 songs? Of course, it turned into 9 songs. How long would it take to record it, then mix, like all the things? And then as these conversations are happening, we, you know, started having some creative conversations about what the musical could be. At one point, they asked me, hey, can you think of any songwriters that might fit the bill? And I provided them with some of my thoughts. Kay was one of them, Kay and her team. We continued talking. And at another point, they asked, hey, would you, be open to this? Could you give us some of your music? And so, you know, of course, I provided it to them. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, like, we'd like you to do this. Would you be into it? And I said, heck yes, I'd be into it. And the Zoom call ended. I had a hot flash, started sweating, realizing how much I just took on, because that was, you know, 6 songs was making me nuts. And, you know, it turned into 9, and I was to produce it. I was to mix it. I was to do all of the things.
And there was just no way I could do all of those things. I quickly realized I need some help with this thing. And that's when initially, I called Kay back. I said, hey, they asked me to do this thing. I'm going to do it. I need your help. And would you do this? And I'll give it to Kay. That's where we are.
And yeah. I said, oh, my God, what? I mean, I was like instantly like, yes. And then, oh, fuck. Yeah. No, now we have to actually do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you can be like, yeah, and then it's done. It's like, yeah. And then, oh, what? What? How
Giddy
do you
up.
Even do that? How do you even do that? I just happened to have some time off. And in between jobs, the timing was perfect. I also was having an insane period. I'd gotten flooded out of my house, and I had to move into like this Airbnb, like up in the hills with my dog and my cat. My husband was on the road. I was like seriously like not okay. I was like really untethered from the earth, which was a perfect psychological place to dive into this work, it turned out. And I literally lost my mind by the end of it. And like I just lost myself in this project. I really, really did, in a way that I've never come close to losing myself in a project the way I did in this one.
Same. It was a lot. It was a lot.
Sounds like a lot.
In a great way, in an overwhelming way, in a beautiful.
It was really emotional. It was really. I mean, not technically, it was hard to pull off, obviously, and there was a lot of like I don't usually do research for my songwriting projects.
For sure.
And I mean, sometimes I do.
That leads perfectly into the next question. So Ooh. Let's go ahead and hear from our friend Platy.
Hey, Open Pike Night, Kay and Tom. This is Platy M3 calling in to talk about Subspace Rhapsody. First off, thank you so much for doing justice to Star Trek songs. I grew up listening to a silly British parody band song called Star Trek and Across the Universe that I managed to tape off the radio as a kid, and my family and I still reference to this day 40 years later. Thanks to y'all, though, my kids will grow up knowing much better songs. My youngest still asks Alexa to play him I'm the X a few times a week, usually whenever he has to go and clean his room or put away laundry and he's going to be in there for a bit. In fact, I asked my little 7-year-old today if he had any questions for you, and I'll pass them on, but they're kind of questions I think I need to sit down and answer him as a dad. He is fascinated to know why Nurse Chapel broke up with Spock.
Aww.
And he really wanted to know why she was so happy while singing the song where she did that out of the mouths of babes. So my question for you, though, is how much research did y'all have to do on the backgrounds of all these characters and plot lines that are going on in Strange New Worlds? Or did you have like big meetings and were you handed a list of all these little minor plot points and references that you needed to make sure were in each song? I'm just very curious how that just nailed all the tiniest of plot points down for, you know, seasons worth, and even side things like down to number one's Gilbert and Sullivan admiration. Again, thank you so much for joining Open Pike Night and for bringing all these awesome songs into our strange world.
Platy M3 with the awesome question. Tom, you want to take it?
Yeah, so I'll start. Well, initially, let me start by saying that some of the bullet points that needed to be hit with all of these songs were as follows. At first, the songs couldn't be superfluous. They couldn't just be songs for the sake of songs. They needed to drive a story. They needed to expose further their personalities, character development. It was really important that it just wasn't a bunch of songs with jazz hands. It needed to be emotional. The showrunners made it very clear to us that they actually said this sentence, we want people to cry. That was the directive. Like, we want people to cry. You know, okay, which is always a super easy thing to do as a musician. Or, you know, you want to make people cry. So, yeah, no problem. And we wanted it to happen several times. So that was absolutely a thing. And then, you know, from a research perspective, we had some songs that from a thematic perspective, they were very universal. And then we had some songs that were super in the weeds. For instance, Status Report in We Are One. Status Report, you know, when that came to me and they said, well, this is going to be called Status Report. They typically do a status report and we need a song. So go. Okay. So, you know, I needed the nomenclature. We would need, you know, the proper vocabulary. We needed to know who did what. So that would come from the writers, Dana and Bill. They would provide that for us. And then we had, and that was a little more on the nose in that, like, this is what you say during a status report and this is who says it. But then it gets a little deeper with the more emotional songs, like Celia's song, for instance, Keep Us Connected, where we needed to hit lots of notes about her past. Okay, talk about that, because that was, I mean, that one fell on her a lot.
Yeah, so with Celia's song, we knew that that was that and the finale were going to be the heavy lifts, but like in two different ways. Yeah. The Uhura song had to sort of cover this, you know, like how she became the kind of this person that she is and how she found herself in this situation. And it was really like we had to include some facts about her life, but it also had to be incredibly emotional in that. And so, you know, we knew it would be we wanted it to be like a very, you know, like a barn burning ballad kind of thing, but it couldn't be treacly, you know. It was like we had to tick a lot of boxes on this, and it turned out we ended up they gave us just enough information. I actually did have to go back, and I got some of the facts wrong in the first draft, so I had to like go back. And also like the hammer piece, like I got a little too literal with the hammer bit, and you know, like
it wasn't Shards of Light.
It wasn't
Shards of Light.
It was like I watched him die, and so I was like very literal, so we kind of had to like pull back on some of like the factual stuff, and so like the notes that. And that was kind of an amazing part of the process too, is that the writers were so generous with with the information, and they were so like they knew what they wanted, but they weren't.
They didn't build a box around us.
They weren't inflexible, and they kind of threw the song briefs around us like a loose garment, you know, like we didn't have to, you know, they didn't like nail us down to, you know, we were able to come up with stuff like I'm the ex, like we came up with that because they really didn't, they just wanted to know what Spock would do in this situation. And they did not give us much beyond that.
Yeah.
And it allowed us to like really stretch into this thing that was like, in a way that like only a songwriter could, because we're helping him to express something in a song that he could never ever say. And, but still like, it has to be true to the character. It was a wonderful collaboration with the writers.
Yeah. And they did other wonderful things where, you know, they would put us to task after our first draft of a song where on at least two songs, you know, Keep Us Connected being one of them and Keeping Secrets being the other, where this, the idea of a twist of what the, you know, initially, you know, she was good at keeping secrets. It saved her and it protected her. And, you know, towards the end, you know, she ends it with, I wish I wasn't so fucking good at keeping secrets because I'm just this, I'm all pent up now. And with Celia, you know, that which, you know, how she is solo all the time, but that turns into her strengths, and these little twists at the very end,
they
guided us into those places. And then sometimes we just traipsed into like magic land. Like, I'm not gonna lie, the whole Spock thing, where it became apparent to me from listening to fans talk about On the X, where they would just say some stuff like, you know, I think maybe that's the moment, you know, for Chapel's song, when she breaks up with him, that's the moment he becomes the Spock we all knew. Like, he had both of these sides, And that heartbreak just shut it down. He's like, I won't make that mistake again. And, you know, that's, you know, that song, his song is that transformation. We did not know that.
We meant to do that.
I wish we knew we were doing that.
It's a pivotal moment in TV's most iconic character.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, like, I was like, wow, we did that. And then some things we did.
You did
some
that.
Things we did mean to do. Like, the, you know, trying our best to figure out how to express Spock in a mathematical way, you know, with, you know, I solve for Y, you know, but on ultimately, the X. You know, those things.
I mean,
super proud of
real
all
quick
things.
On that, our producer John, who's not here, would kill us if we didn't delve into that lyric especially. It's also one of my favorite. I mean, did you start with it? Did you go like, oh, this is a great lyric, let's start here? Or did you like, was it iterations? How did you get to one of the most clever lyrics of music history?
End of it.
Oh my God.
It's so good.
Guys, it's so good. Oh my God. Say that again.
Yeah. One of the most clever cleverest? I don't know. Lyrics of music history. For sure. No, that song is so, it's probably my favorite. It's so
good.
Well,
I think Tom knew from having spoken with Ethan that it was, you know, and what Ethan's kind of like references were, that you wanted it to be kind of like a dark kind of synth pop kind of thing. Yeah. And so when Tom came to our session that day and we had the pages, we knew what it was going to be. We knew that it was going to be, you know, we kind of, you know, it was just going to be a response to Chappell's song. Yeah.
She did him dirty.
So he starts playing. Mm-hmm. She did him dirty. And so he starts playing and I just started singing, "This news really changes," and we were like,
"That's what we're doing."
Talk about magic, you guys.
And then it ended up being a mirror image. We did not plan that.
Nope.
It just kind of like he started playing, I started singing, and it was just like, "Oh my God, we're gonna just do the Joy Division version of
I'm Ready."
Yes,
no, I'm ready.
100%. That's 100% correct. And you know, you mentioned, you know, those last two lyrically were bonkers, and there were just the texting towards the end of that.
Yeah, we were like fighting
back and forth.
We're
just like trying to get that lyric right. You know, just desperately.
Because I wanted to get like really into setting up the equation, and like, and Tom was like, "No, he's drowning in a sea of pain," and I was like, "No," like, you know. And we were text fighting and like. And so we got into our first sort of like disagreements about this song.
We were going back. And then ultimately we ended up saying, you know, being emotional with the equation. So, you know, and I've got the text to prove it, just back and forth until we landed it. And we were like, yes, we did it.
Well, we always had I'm the X. Like we always had I'm the X. But like, how did we, and we knew we wanted it to be, you know, like searching for Y, or, you know, we
something
wanted
like
to have
that.
The,
we had to, yeah.
But we just, it's hard. It was really hard to set. It was really hard to set it up in a way that people that wouldn't sound like it was trying too hard. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even though we tried really hard.
We tried really hard. I have to mention though, Ethan, because he was one of, you know, when I first, initially I had to fly out there and meet everybody and figure out who could sing, who wanted to sing, what their skill sets were. But Ethan was one of those guys that came in initially and the first thing out of his mouth is like, "I'm not a singer." You know, like I'm like, okay. So, you know, I'm sitting there with a guitar. We're talking about his influences. What does he like to listen to? And we start singing and he just opens his mouth. He starts singing in this luscious, like black velvet
baritone
painting of a voice, you know, just starts going and with that D, and I'm like, baby, you can sing. You know?
he was my big surprise of the episode.
He was all of us. When I reported back, you know, so I had met with everybody and I assessed, and you know, it was for Kay and I assess, you know, to one, you know, just get the temperature of everybody. And, you know, I'm happy to say, and I'm sure you can tell everybody was having a blast at this thing. Like there was, whether somebody considered themselves a singer or not a singer, everybody was 1,000,000% in the entire time. There wasn't any hand-wringing or any of that. It was, we're going to do this. It's going to be great. And that's that, right? So, you know, when I came back and, you know, we would start a song, we would invariably listen to my meetings with the actress or the actor and to listen to their instrument. Like, What is their range? Mm-hmm. What can they do? What do they like to listen to? And that's, you know, how we sort of gauged what somebody could sing, hopefully, right? And we got lucky, like even with the keys we chose, we didn't have to change a single key out of any of it. Like we delivered,
crazy.
It was crazy like that. Yes, total luck.
The whole thing was very divine in that way.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna get more into that later. I do kind of want to go back to the writing. So you both come onto the project. Like, how long from then to having a script in your hand was it at that point?
I think we had like a treatment more than a, did you, I don't know if Tom, you may have had a script. You had a script.
So after I came back.
But it was very rough, like the first draft.
Yeah. I mean, it was when I returned from the fact-finding mission and told them, you know, the singers who could sing, who wants to sing, what their ranges are. They then came back with, okay, it's going to be six songs. These are the people that are going to sing it. That's that. And then the very next thing was getting a very loose, rough draft of what it was going to be, at which point, by the time we got the draft, that's when Kay and I started meeting to write the songs. And we wrote them in order as it went. I had to start writing the first two before Kay was fully on board because contracts, business, blah, all of those things. So I began those two. But, we started from scratch at, what was the first one we did? It was,
How
would that feel?
Not for nothing, but if it weren't for me, Tom would have finished this whole thing in a week. This whole episode in a week. Like, he would have stayed up for a week straight and written the whole thing.
Because
it was only for me that it was only because of me that it took 5 weeks.
Yeah.
That leads right into our next caller question. Magically, you guys are really good at this. It's like you've done it before, but let's hear from our friend Jack.
Hello, Open Pike. It is me, Jack from 2 Minute Track again. I am back. And hello, the songwriters of Subspace Rhapsody. Great, great music, great, great episode, great, great story. And I think you guys did an amazing job. And I've got a question for you, if you don't mind. I'm wondering roughly how long it took to write all these songs, because I think they all fit in really well with the story and they all sounded really good. And also working with the cast of Strange New Worlds and their vocal range on what they could sing. But I think you guys did a really good job and I hope that you enjoyed it. And I hope that you're enjoying your time on Open Pike. But thanks for having me, and I'll see you next time.
Well, thanks, Jack. It took us 5 weeks. 5 weeks, is that right, Tom?
From the very beginning to having everything recorded with demo vocals. Yeah, like approved.
Like driving up the mountain So we had a Letters to Cleo gig at the end of the writing, and we were trying to finish the finale. And it was like,
it was killing us. It was killing us.
Killing.
We knew it had to be great in the finale and do all the things with everybody singing and
no pressure.
Oh my God. It was like, it was such a bear. And this was when I really started to like I couldn't have conversations with people. I couldn't I just was constantly putting together the puzzle, like this puzzle in my head at all times and trying to figure out. So we had a Letters to Cleo gig at the ski resort at the top, like an hour north of Denver.
Low oxygen situation.
Low oxygen. We were like, we had literal altitude sickness. And we were like, we were 2 days on the top of this mountain. We had to play a gig in literal blizzard at the bottom of a ski slope.
Awesome.
And it was amazing.
It was amazing.
And like the whole time, I'm just like, I have Tom's just like the pieces of what Tom has done with no vocals, just like trying to figure out just trying to put together the lyric. And I said to Tom in the van, or texted him when we got to the place, I was like, hey, do you want to get together and like figure this out? And he's like, no, I do not. And which I really respect.
I was so
because
bad.
Like boundaries, like you got to stop. Sometimes you got to stop and then start again. But I couldn't.
That's how you keep collaborations alive.
But I couldn't stop. So I finally just like put the whole thing together in my head. And when we left to drive back down the mountain, I was like, Tom, I got it.
Yeah.
I got it.
She was like angry and joyous all at the same time. I felt like she was going to punch me in the mouth or something. It was amazing. It was amazing.
I wasn't even human at that point.
There was nothing left for either of us. Human. I mean, we were
just Klingon.
Yeah, just, just depleted entirely in every possible way. So, so 5 weeks, and then our demo singers were singing.
Yep.
Now I don't know if this is just part of the process for me was like, usually when I do a songwriting job where someone else is going to be singing, like I usually sing the demos, you know, but in this case, it was like we had these because Dom had gone and clocked the actors' abilities and like we had their ranges, we had, you know, samples of their voices and, you know, especially with Celia and Christina, who are like have these big stage voices, like I was never going to be able to write the songs for them that I wanted to write if I was singing the demos, because I just don't have that instrument that they have. So we had these two incredible demo singers that Sarah Mann and Brianna.
Shout out Sarah and Brianna.
Brianna Gibbs, who did our demos for the actors. And it was so freeing to not have to rely on my own voice for these songs, because I could never sing the way these songs are. You know, I could just never sing these melodies. And I have the voice memos to prove it.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got all these songs, not just voice memos, but like our writing sessions. And
tell me there'll be like one of those box sets with the old, with the demos and everything. I want it all.
Yeah, if there's anything you guys feel comfortable sharing as far as like a screenshot or a little clip, send it to the email you've been corresponding with, because our fans would love that. And I know they would be eternally grateful, as would we.
Oh, man.
I'll go through my voice memos.
Maybe we save that for the box set. Who knows?
Right?
Oh, sure.
A tease. Just give us a tease, though. Yeah. Make people want the box.
Well,
set.
I'll go through them.
I'll give you one. You know, interesting thing as it relates to stuff that made that that didn't make the cut. Mm-hmm. So the Klingon moment. You know, in we are one. We knew the Klingons were going to do some singing. It was "Hail the Klingons, Uhura," which Anson crushed that line. my second favorite line that he had sung on that. I think he also delivered my very favorite line of the whole thing, which was "The Starship Enterprise feels electrified." Yeah. I mean, you could not sell that line. To be your captain. You couldn't possibly sell that line any better than he sold it. He crushed that. Mm-hmm. But we knew the Klingon thing was going to happen. We were twice a week we would get together to write these songs in order. We're at that moment where we have to figure out what the hell that's going to be. You know, out of my mouth is like, well, you know, Klingon opera's a thing. Maybe we should do Klingon opera. And we're just sort of like sitting on the couch, staring at our LaCroix and looking out the window. He's just like, Kay's just like, wait a second. Why don't we do a K-pop thing with them? And complete pop. Nothing. It's just dead silence. And then a moment explodes. I'm like, oh yeah, we're going to do a K-pop. like she mentioned, by the time we got to this song, we're nuts, man. It's a lot of music to write in a short amount of time. And also couple that with us being a little more comfortable and giving fewer F's, because the songs were landing, the showrunners were digging them, the writers were digging it, and we were working well together. So we felt they made us feel comfortable opening up, right? And we opened up right at the, you know, because you don't want to open up too hard at the beginning, right? You know, towards the end. So we're just like, F it. So we discussed some K-pop. She shows me some K-pop stuff, like something, you know, in here, like this vibe. And I was like, that sounds great. You're going to sell it to them. So we have our Zoom meeting, and then you tell us. So we would have a weekly Zoom meeting to do, you know, talk about progress of the song.
Yeah. So we would play them whatever was the latest thing that we had. And so on this particular day, and usually Tom leads the meeting because, you know, Tom's got the, because Tom's Tom and he's a good leader. And so on this particular day, Tom's like, Kay has something to say. And I was like, listen, this may sound crazy, but we think that the Klingons, that you need to make sure that this Klingon scene, because also, I don't know if you remember this, Tom, they were kind of like maybe hedging whether the Klingons were going to be in it.
Yes, that's right.
Like they were kind of like, is this, trying to figure out how it was going to work, you know?
Yeah.
And so we were like,
what, was it their idea to have the Klingons in it?
Well, it was their idea to have the Klingons in it, but they were trying, they were struggling.
Were they going
with,
to
like,
sing? There was a Hail the Klingons Uhura.
Right.
TBD what that meant. TBD what okay. that really
right.
meant.
So there was sort of like, you know, and then the opera, you know, it would be opera if they did, and you know, it was still being bounced around. So so I was like, Tom and I think that you definitely have, you have to have the Klingon singing, and then it should be this. And I played them, I like shared screen, played my favorite K-pop video, and we were like, here are your Klingons. And they were like,
silence.
They were like,
more explosions,
definitely,
then yes.
Definitely, yeah. Yes.
Which
definitely.
Is, you know, and this is a testament to all of them. I mean, I think Kay mentioned it earlier on, is like, we couldn't have asked for a more creative, wonderful sandbox to create stuff in with Bill and Dana, and couldn't have, you know, better leaders guiding us with definitive direction, but not holding on too tightly, you know, allowing us to be ourselves, but, you know, guiding it gently so that we could feel comfortable being as audacious with the
suggesting
music.
Suggesting that the Klingons be a K-pop band.
Yeah, which is bonkers. So, you know, we did it, and we loved it, and then they loved it. And then we got a couple weeks later when everybody else heard it. A little scared, a little scary.
A little nervous.
And it, you know,
little buyer's remorse.
A bit, yeah. So, you know, it came back to us that it was like that conversation when, you know, you tell your parents you want to go to art school and they're like, well, you can do art school, but can you still get a degree in business, please? You know, right. So the degree in business was please do an opera version as a just in case. So that was our degree in business. And our art school was, fuck it, K-pop, right? So we did both. In the opera version, is, you know, is really,
it
really, it exists and it's really cool. And
they filmed it.
Yeah. And Bruce Horak, I believe, is the actor.
Friend of the pod.
Yeah. Yep. Fantastic. He crushed that too. And it was shot. So, God, that was a long way to get to, I believe that exists. And I believe that that will be unearthed at some point in time. For everybody to
Tom,
see.
Tom, if that is not on the Blu-ray, I am emailing you personally to get that. I have to hear it.
It exists.
I mean, the K-pop was the right choice, Kay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, 100%. Kay.
But I also want to hear the opera.
And I cannot wait to play some of you guys' comments for Bill Wolkoff when he comes back to the show.
Oh,
he's one of our favorite subjects to speak
with.
He's
the sweetest.
We can't wait.
We got to celebrate his birthday with a little on the DL showing of the episode. Dana was there. Henry was there.
Akiba
was
there.
In spirit.
But Dylan was there.
It was amazing. We love them.
Cool.
We love them. Couldn't happen without them.
And you continue to just waltz directly into the next question, which has a little bit to do with musical styles.
All right.
Hey, Open Pike Night. Another musical episode? Well, goodness gracious. What else could I say but I'm not the postman off a Seinfeld, just use a Vulcan mind meld. My name's a raw hand that I've been dealt. I'm Newman. That's right, friends.
Newman. Wow.
Your second favorite space hippie from the Movies for Days podcast. Just so excited that we're doing another musical episode. Very quickly, because I loved it so much. In this medium of non-musical television where one episode we suddenly do a musical, I feel like the pressure is to not have one musical style, but to kind of have a bunch of songs. Each one of them are of a certain style. Did that present any interesting hurdles for you? Or did that just make it more fun because there was more variety and you didn't have to stay to like one kind of musical style that defined the show? And Next question, is there any songs you wish you could have done that there just wasn't room for? Are there chunks of songs that got written or even recorded that just ended up on the cutting room floor? I think we all are wondering, is there more to the Klingon rap? That's what I got. Newman the Space Hippie out.
Thanks, Newman the Space Hippie. That was quite a... What did he do just then? It was kind of like a Weird Al Yankovic kind of thing.
That's right. That's right.
Put his own Seinfeld words to...
I'm the X, yeah. So
the first question is about musical styles. And you know, it's funny because we didn't... You know, Tom, you and I just wrote
we write. We just went.
And the thing is that, you know, in the script we knew if something was, you know, we never had to go rogue or anything, or, you know, figure out what
except
the
for
vibe
the K-pop thing, which was completely rogue.
Except for right.
But other than that, right. No.
100%.
Yeah.
Or like. I mean, we took a couple of crazy liberties like that, or the Gregorian chant on
Keep Us Connected. Yeah.
But for the most part, like Tom, you know, Tom and I have been writing together since we were in our 20s, and, you know, and we've been playing,
gigs later.
And writing together. So like we just write how we write, and they came out the way they come out. I mean, I didn't realize at the time that Tom kind of had like a roadmap for like a couple of the songs, but for the most part, Tom would come in with a guitar part and like a little nugget of a verse. Like as Tom likes to say, a little nug, and then a little melodic bit. Mm-hmm. And then we would just go singing at each other, all the things. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, sing it. And we would get together every time, you know, like every couple of days for like 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's it. Doesn't get better after that.
Like three LaCroix a piece. And we would invariably come up with what, like the skeleton, the sketch of what the song was going to be.
Every time. We didn't have a clunker, which is unusual. Well, maybe it could not have been that easy. Every time we set to write a song, by the end of that hour and a half, we had a song.
We wrote it.
You know, it wasn't arranged out, but like we had a verse, we had a chorus, we had a bridge, we had those things, and we would, you know, have some lyrics that needed to be fleshed out. And just quickly, as it relates to styles, you know, there are a couple things stylistically, like. We knew Status Report is an ensemble number. We Are One is an ensemble number. We knew it had to do those things, right? That was, you know, those two things are modern musicals, whatever that means to us. That's what those things turned out to be. It's a modern, 2000s musical, right? The only one that was the hat tip was Rebecca's song, Connect to Your Truth, which, you know, she's got that Gilbert and Sullivan reference, which was such a wonderful opportunity for me to show my love to, the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s musicals and really lean into that from a stylistic perspective. So that's sort of like a little, you know, just a little love letter to all of those musicals that, we loved as kids. I mean, I had, I played in pits as a kid. I'm a jazz musician. So, you know, the jazz repertoire a lot of the times is improvising over musical pop songs, right, of the day. And a lot of those songs were from musicals. So that was a moment for me to stretch that from a musical perspective. And then, you know, the other stuff, what did they came with their pop song?
Like chapel song. So chapel song. Tom knew it, he wanted it to be like, I can bring on the bacon, that kind of a thing.
Sexy number, yep.
And yeah. And Jess Bush, the actor, her range really lent itself to like a very simple melody that she could like really just like chew it up. And she really, really did. And that was actually a song. Another question was about any deleted songs or lyrics. We didn't have any deleted songs. It was all killer, no filler.
Yes.
Let's be honest. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but on I'm Ready, at the end of the song, like when we were writing it, we were like, you know, we could really F Spock up here at the end. And we were like, no, that's mean. Let's not do that. So we wrote kind of a nicer, like in a nicer ending thing.
She didn't cut him up.
She wasn't mean to him. It was just kind of like, she's just thinking
she
about
tore out his heart, but didn't step on it.
My life. Yeah. Yeah. And so when we sent it to Bill and Dana, they were like, nah, can you really actually F Spock? And we were like, Oh my gosh.
Yes, we can. Yes, as
why,
a matter of
why,
fact.
Why, yes, we can. Yes, we can.
On the spot, as a matter of fact. On the spot, as a matter of fact.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So we went back to that.
Yeah.
The Keeping Secrets is there. That that is a longer song in on the soundtrack. Yeah. They cut out the second verse.
Yeah.
On the show, which was a very, very good call, because we really need to get to that twist in the show. Mm-hmm. But you can hear the longer version of that on the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Other big changes.
Well, I mean, what about the on Jess's song? Oh, I'm Ready. Yeah, I'm Ready didn't have a dance bit. There almost wasn't a dance bit. The dance bit happened as a spurious. A happenstance, you know, going through the channels again.
Tom was like, "I want a dance break,"
but only after clicking past Grease.
Tom demanded it.
That's right. I was clicking past Grease amidst this writing on a weekend, and whenever I pass it, it stops, and I watch the whole thing because I'm that guy. And it occurred to me, I was like, "The fuck are we doing? There's no dance number in this thing," and I think we pitched it at our next meeting. I was like, look, they're already in a bar. Let's just do it. And I mean, that was, there was nothing rogue about that idea. Everybody was just like, duh.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we do that? Let's do that. And that's what we did.
Yeah.
She's in a white jumpsuit. It's Grease.
Right?
Like, make it happen.
Yes,
like,
do it.
So if you had stumbled across Sweeney Todd, it would have ended very differently. The episode.
What I love about that scene is that they don't have anybody like dancing like woo, like, you know, they don't have any like real like choreography, like they all dance kind of like nerds,
flow in it. Yeah,
they
yeah,
dance
yeah.
Like the, it's very authentic because none of them is going to be out there like boosh, doosh, yeah. doosh. You know, they're like really
they
just
dance
like
scientists. Da, da, da,
da. So again, speaking of authenticity to your characters who are scientists, we have another call right here from our good friend Abby.
Hey, Open Pike and Kay and Tom. First of all, thank you for this wonderful musical, which could possibly be my two young daughters' favorite episode of Star Trek that I've ever shown them. Second of all, your talent is immense, and I'm so glad that I got introduced to that, and I hope that there is so much more coming. I have a million questions I could ask you, but I trust that the guys and the other listeners are going to do a lot of them. So I'm just going to go with, can you talk a little bit about balancing writing in the voice of a character and furthering the plot or the story of the musical while you're creating the songs? And what did you find to be the easiest and hardest part about this? With characters that have so much history and gravitas and story behind them, it might have been easy to find their voice in song or difficult. So I'm really curious, and thank you for keeping us all singing. Hope you and yours are well. Talk soon.
Abby, what?
That is the mother of the child you heard earlier.
Oh my gosh. Well, Abby, you're daughter is absolutely adorable, and I could listen to her sing our songs all day. And that is an amazing question.
Yeah.
So as Tom said earlier, we really took this very seriously. The characters in Star Trek are, you know, the canon of the show is so rich and deep. And we knew how much we didn't know coming into this. So we needed to find out, you know, especially like with a character like Spock, you have to, you know, I called Brent, you know, Brendan was my nephew, Brendan.
We had some lifelines.
We called the lifeline very regularly. It was, you know, we asked questions. We asked people when we didn't know, and
Bill and Dana were, you know, pillars.
Bill and Dana were amazing,
as well as Henry and Akiva.
When it came to Well, I always come back to the Uhura song because, like I said, we knew that was coming and it needed to accomplish a couple of different things, but it also needed to be incredibly emotional. And that's not something you can just like pull out of you can't just make people cry. At least I can't, you know, like, yeah. I'm not.
You can't manufacture inspirato.
No, you can't.
Jack Black would say.
We have all like the raw material for it. Like, you know, her voice is amazing. You know, we know that whatever we give her to sing, she's just gonna murder it. Yeah. And like, and you know, we've got like pieces of the backstory and that they really want to make sure that we get in there. So that's great. And so when we sat down to write this, like I didn't want to say anything to Tom, but I was like, oh, I was scared. I was intimidated.
But not so intimidated that she wouldn't open up the writing session with like, oh, by the way, we're going to open this song up with a Gregorian chant. So, no, she wasn't that friggin' scared. I mean, the typical situation was I come in, she hands me a croy. I take the guitar out. I've got a little soup starter to get us started on a song, like a little nug to show her. But she wouldn't. She doesn't even let me do that. She's just like, no. It's like, listen,
I want to.
I think her eyes are closed and she's just sort of bobbing her head. She's like, I want to start this thing with a Gregorian chant. And it was just another one of those moments, dead silence, head explosion, mop it up, tune back in. What does that mean? And instead of talking it through, she just goes and sings it. She's, you know, not with words, but she's like, hum, num, 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 num. Another dead pause because I have no idea what the hell's going on. At that point, I mean, we're one song away from We Are One. So we are skeletons of ourselves at this point, you know? So, you know, I'm trying to figure out what that is. And we work it out in, you know, another audacious idea from the goddess Kay Hanley. And so, you know.
But then it just happened to work with Tom has this like arpeggiated harmonic guitar thing, which weirdly
just worked going right
perfectly
into it.
With the Gregorian chant bit. Yeah. And then we're off to the Tom, you also had, you had that, you had that, you came in
soup
with like
starter.
That little piece.
A little soup starter. Yeah.
Just a nug. And, little nug.
And little nug.
It was a little nug. Yeah. And this song teed me up for dying during We Are One.
Yeah.
This song took me to a place where I literally have never cried writing a song. Oh. But every day that we wrote, I was just sobbing for days writing this song.
Yeah.
And like thinking about, you know, because it wasn't just, it was like I was writing it for like me and my sisters, and you know, I just like it felt so personal to me. Mm-hmm. And like it was a song that, you know, without the, you know, the Hammer reference and some like a song that like I would have written, that Tom and I would have written for ourselves. Like
they're universal. It's all universal. We Are One. It's a universal vibe. Keeping secrets, it's a universal vibe. Feeling that I'm always solo, but I'm taking care of everybody else. Universal vibe with all these other things. So, you know, to get back to Abby's question, you know, it was, I can speak from a macro perspective, it was incredibly important and it was absolutely part of the plan to make sure that these songs, yes, were emotional, but that they exposed and enhanced what we knew about these personalities. So they drew, you know, it was character development, and I feel like we really achieved that, and I'm very, very proud of that. Mm-hmm.
Did when you met with the actors, did they offer any suggestions for their songs or their
Some
stories
did.
Told in their songs?
Some did.
Christina did.
Christina did.
Christina just jumped right in. She was like, well, what if it does? She didn't.
Yeah. So, what, it sounds like her.
what if it does this? What if it does?
Yes.
And I was like,
right. Yeah. Well, so when I met her, as I mentioned, you know, I met everybody. Christina, she was also a catalyst for the musical episode. I know Akiba was thinking about it. I know there were some rumblings about it, but Christina was, really pushing for it. And when I met with her, like her, you know, of course we have no idea of what it's going to be about. We knew nothing. When I had met with them, it was just trying to figure out who sings and who wants to sing and what their ranges are. But she was very clear to me. It's like, I want a really sexy dance number. That was what she wanted. So, you know, turns out that, like, we couldn't really give that to her, you know, because that's just not how the story arc went on. And of course, right. It all worked out for the better because, God,
we gave her, we gave song. Her, she could shoot, she'd we gave her something to chew the scenery. Yeah,
you get under the sheets with Jim Kirk.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't complain. Her, you know, she's got her own musical career now. Yeah. Which was certainly springboarded by this episode.
No, she's always had it. Vice versa. Even before. Yeah, she's...
I heard that, like, she took this... Someone told us recently that they heard that she took this role to kind of further her music career.
Mm. Yeah. So, well, at the very least, she takes both equally as serious, and potentially that she was a singer before an actress. I don't really know that. You're going to have to ask her.
Yeah. When we spoke with her, she said that she had initially wanted to be a dancer. And then when she found out that the dancers don't really, you know, get the spotlight or get to sing the larger parts, she was like, well, maybe I want to be a singer. And TV just, it's really strange with this cast. Like, they're all amazingly talented, incredibly beautiful people, and like half of them were like, yeah, just sort of fell into this role, and you know, it's become something huge, and it's really cool to hear.
Maybe that's why it doesn't feel as theatrical. Interesting that you say that, because it doesn't feel theatrical. Like, it looks cinematic.
Yes.
Yeah.
The look of the show is very cinematic. But the actors, there's like a realness to them that actually belies exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the short answer to every question from all of our callers and all the questions that Cam and I have had so far has been, it's a kind of magic that has happened with this episode and you guys and this crew. I mean, like,
Queen.
Just the way you describe it is... I'm getting goosebumps just listening to you describe the songwriting process, and that's intense.
It sounds
so,
like a really fun writing room to be a part of.
It was.
And thank you. It was
the job of a lifetime. Tom and I just like had the best time doing this,
and cool.
Like, just so grateful for the opportunity Yeah.
And for all the ways it could have gone wrong, it didn't.
But it didn't.
Yeah.
You guys are batting 1,000, seriously. We have a few more calls to get through. I promise we'll get through these pretty quickly.
Okay.
Our next one up is from our friend Mariah.
Hello, Open Pike Night. It's Mariah. And I apologize for the sound of rain on my car, because that's the quietest place for me to record, and it's not quiet today. Anyway, hello, songwriters of Subspace Rhapsody. Very excited to have you on the show. I have two very specific compliments and then a question for you to talk about. Very specific compliment number one is the trumpets at the end of Keep Us Connected. I have a couple of friends who are similarly obsessed with the music and this episode. And so we'll just text each other, "the trumpets!" exclamation point, and like, we'll know what we're talking about. It's great. Second very specific compliment, sensational, ovational, or the boldly explorational crew of the Enterprise. I have laughed so hard over this, and it's just such a Broadway moment where it's this big finish and you're making up words and you just have to make it rhyme. Just loved it. Okay,
perfect.
So question is, how did you approach writing for established characters and already cast actors versus getting to do a songwriting gig from more of a blank slate? Were there things that were easier, harder, just different in your approach, given that you were constrained by character voices and literal actors' singing voices for what you could create? And how was that? Thanks so much for talking to us. Live long and prosper.
Aww.
That was very sweet. And I love how you got into the weeds with the specific musical moments that you dug. I'll start. There's some, you know, parts of those questions we definitely have already gotten into it, but I'll get specific with just a quickie with the trumpet thing at the end of Keep Us Connected. Mm-hmm. That is the Brandenburg Concertos, and that is Penny Lane. That's where that idea occurred, and it was just seemed like a no brainer. So that was that.
Love it.
And as it relates to writing for established characters and stories, as opposed to starting from scratch, well, Kay, talk about that, because you know we write for ourselves, you know, in Cleo versus writing for other voices.
Writing with a blank slate is, I'm done with that. I don't
it's
like
harder.
It,
it can it's be like, harder.
It's so hard because, and this is the I've been. You know, Tom and I both have made our way in different lanes into television. So I write for animation, and he, you know, does all of his magic over at Paramount Television. And I absolutely love having a script in front of me where it's like, words, 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 character, 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 story, story, story. And then right here, here's the song. Here's where the song goes. This is who's singing it. This is, it needs to move the story from this part to this part. Go. Yeah. And like, and that to me is the ultimate creative expression, because it has, I'm working in the service of somebody else's creative vision. I have no ego in it whatsoever. Because it's not about me. I don't have to worry about what I'm saying about myself, because I'm in character. And so that is the I love writing to script. It's where I'm my best. It's where I'm my most fearless, my most expressive, my most creative. And then I get really like this when I'm writing for myself, because then all of a sudden I'm afraid of like saying
baggage.
Too much or saying it the wrong way.
We got all of our baggage. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to echo that, you know, it also allows us to write music and say things we would never, you know, write otherwise. You know, when a showrunner or a writer comes to us and they have a very clear vision with words and they articulate what it is they want, it's our job to transform those words into music. And especially I love it when they if they can speak music. I actually love that even more when they're like, you know, I want these vibes and this sort of thing. And you know, it's almost like you're challenging me to do this thing that I've never done before, and to say these things I've never said before. There is a lot of freedom there, and it's very different from scoring something, which is a similar thing, but much more ethereal and much more abstract, you know, to do it without words and doing it solely with air, right? Colored air. But it's all the same in that you end up doing stuff that you would never do because you've got too much bullshit in you from your own personality when you're writing your own stuff. And that's what makes a great artist a great artist, is when they can either lay into all of that bullshit and throw it all out there, or they can just throw it all aside and say, I don't care. I'm just going to go do the thing.
This is for somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like
that's awesome.
I feel like Cam and I have really walked that line for this interview. Like we've had a good combination of our own bullshit
and you know,
the freedom to put that aside at sometimes as well.
You guys have been of maximum love and service to this conversation.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So
that's very sweet.
I do. I mean, I got to do my job as a podcast host for the podcast listeners to say Mariah Kay is wearing a T-shirt with that exact lines from Unshakable, Improbable, Unstoppable. Since the whole thing right there.
Yeah.
Crew of the Enterprise.
And can we give a shout out to Bill and Dana with that? So, you know, we ended it with 100%. A few of those adjectives.
Unbreakable, unshakable, unrockable, unstoppable. And they were like, could you keep going?
And we were initially just like, really? And they're like, oh, really? Oh, as a matter of fact,
well, they
yes.
wanted boldly explorational. And I was like, oh, my God, what are we going to rhyme with that? So we made up a word.
Yeah.
Ovational. Yeah. Sure. Ovational's
okay.
a word. Why not?
We're singing it.
It is now,
it's a
yeah.
song.
That's right.
Exactly.
We have a song.
Is that your favorite note from theirs, or do you have a suggestion of theirs that...
That's a funny note, but, you know, I mentioned that earlier, like, their insistence on, you know, making a twist to what a line means or what a song. Yeah. You know, they were catalysts for that a couple of the times, which... Okay. Yeah,
and then
cool.
Did you have any suggestions that maybe informed the story? Yeah. Did it flow the other way?
You'd have to ask them. I mean, I can only assume that we were all just sort of swimming the seas together in some things, you know, they would lay into things more once the song happened, but you would have to ask them. I mean, obviously we certainly were, we had to be, we were following their direction. And a lot of times, you know, they were giving us these little grocery bags of vocab and, you know, things that they wanted people to be saying. So they certainly helped us.
You're a professional. Our good friend Grayson called in next, and he has a very specific question about that exact kind of thing. Here is Grayson.
Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you. No, I'm kidding you guys. If there was ever an opportunity to Rickroll Open Pike Night, this was it. I had to shoot my shot. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak to these incredibly talented songwriters. I feel like they did such a great job with La'an's character, especially. She did so much growing in that show, especially, you know, in How Would That Feel and Keeping Secrets. It's also a huge Uhura show. She solves the big problem and sings what I think is probably the hero song. You guys can tell me, but keep us connected. My favorite, though, is I'm Ready, because it is such a huge party in the bar. And if I wasn't already crushing on Sam Kirk after seeing his moves during that song, I am a Dan Jeanette stan for life. My big question for Kay and Tom, though, what role did jargon play in your creative process? Star Trek is known for technobabble, and you chose to use it in the very first sung lines of the show. The intermix chamber and containment field are stable. And then later in that song, the inertial dampeners. And let's table the dampers versus dampeners debate for right now. But impulse engines, phaser banks, warp core, all of that tech talk is in there. And it's not what you normally hear in a song. So were you asked to include it, or did you intend to give nerds like me something to latch onto right away? Thanks so much, you guys.
Okay, first,
thank you,
Grayson. That's a killer question. That was a killer jam you gave to us early on. I appreciate that. You sound amazing. Before I get into the question, I have to echo how amazing Kirk's dancing is. No, it's not Kirk. It's his brother
Sam.
Yeah. So, but you mentioned a great
in the
one.
Bar. He's rocking out.
But he's even better during the Klingon moment.
Yeah.
During the Klingon moment, they are. So he's in soft focus. Then whatever genius decided to put him into focus, and he is just bopping with that jam. It's one of my favorite. I get goosies.
It's
one of my favorite moments
was
of the whole
so
thing.
Funny.
Oh my God. And you know what? Let's just take a minute just to understand that by the time we got to the fourth song, we were getting a little more comfortable with the funny, which I'm so thankful for, because that's one of the things that makes this iteration of Star Trek work, at least for me, and I think work so well, is they didn't lose the funny. I feel like a lot of sci-fi franchises post the initial Star Wars trilogy, they got very serious for quite some time and they lost all the funny. Then Guardians of Galaxy happened. The funny was there. And I think everybody clocked is like, that's what we're missing. And then the funny came back in the Star Wars shows that happened. And consequently, you know, in this iteration of Star Trek, it has the funny. And I think that's so important, which is a long way to say, I'm happy that we had the confidence to include those moments of levity. You know, we got moments of levity with Spock when he's just like, I won't miss singing, or Prime Directive.
I was determined to get Prime Directive in somewhere.
Nice. Yes.
And it just didn't work anywhere.
Well, we put it
and
in
so
anyway.
Finally, we put it in anyway, but made it a joke so that Spock would be like, no, not really.
Not really. Yeah. So, you know, we felt comfortable doing that stuff. Okay. So that's that stuff. Yes. Okay. So now back to the initial, you know, like the songs like Status Report and We Are One, when we have to talk about things they're doing, not emotional things necessarily, although We Are One has an emotional component, we need to be saying the right things for the right character. And that's when Bill and Dana, you know, there's simply no way it could have been done without them. You know, they would quite literally say, this is what Spock does. This is, you know, what he's talking about, and just go down the line. And then, you know, putting a melody to those words, figuring out how to rhyme those crazy ass words, and then coming up with a refrain, you know, the apologies, which, you know, it needed to be something that a scientist would say. And, you know, where they're not, and they're not pants on fire about, oh my God, we're singing, you know, they're in control. They're clocking it. They're assessing it in real time, all of these things. And could not have happened without Bill and Dana. Just an impossibility.
Oh man. I'm going to go watch this episode as soon as we're done here tonight.
So I just wanted to say something quickly about the Klingons. They only told us, like, since we weren't going to learn Klingon for that, I mean, we could have.
We asked if they wanted that.
We didn't have God.
They said
and
no.
We did ask. We did offer. Yeah, and asked, they were like, yes. No. Yeah. We offered. Because we definitely would have not done that. But but we did have to go and research the weapons, the violent imagery, and how are we going to work that into this? And we found the Macleth was the weapon of choice, and you know, and so finding out about the Klingons was the most fun thing because I didn't really get it, but now I do.
Make your blood stream, baby.
I'm a Klingon stan for life.
Yeah.
Now I want a Josie and the Pussycats translated into Klingon album.
So ooh!
Putting that on
I bet someone can do that.
Vision board.
You know what? This is a job for ChatGPT.
Yeah. Yes. If ever there was
that's
one.
That's the only thing it's good for.
That's the only thing.
It's the only thing it would be good for. Mm. It's the first time I've ever said that.
Yeah. And the last time you'll ever say that. Yes.
Yeah. It's the opposite of this is a job for a superhero. Mm. Speaking of superheroes, we do have a couple callers that are superheroes for our show. They call in every single time we put the call out, and they always bring the magic to their calls. And of course, you know, I am talking about Michelle from Crusher Convo.
Hey, Open Pike Night. As you know from my comments on the pod, I adored Subspace Rhapsody. The music is on repeat for me. I absolutely adored the different genres that were used, how the songs tied into the stories and completed character arcs. So thank you so much to those who were involved behind the music and just making that happen. It seems like the season was really well planned out because they knew they had to land in episode 9 with these character arcs. So it's a well thought out season that I think the music and the songs did justice to in bringing those things to kind of a crescendo, if you will. And as a musician, as somebody who loves music, it was just a joy for me. So thank you for all the hard work you put in. You really pulled it off. My question is, which song was the most difficult for you to compose or put together? And I'm wondering if it was Status Report, because that's one of my favorites, but all that tech talk and the way that you rhymed the different words, it was just wonderful. But I also think of Uhura's song, Keep Us Connected, because that song was very emotional and it tied back to a lot of Uhura's character arc, and the music in it was just wonderful. Music is so important in media, especially visual media, and this just perfectly told the story. So thank you for that. And usually on here, I make a Crusher connection. And I'm just going to say, Keep Us Connected also kind of reminded me of Beverly Crusher's story arc. So if you're a fan of Beverly Crusher, would love to hear what you think of that. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on this one. Thanks for coming on. Live long and prosper.
Tom, let's answer that. What song was the hardest to pull off? We'll answer at the same time. 3, 2, 1.
We are one. No question about it. And I'll just I'll give you a quick little, you asked about status reports. So I'll give you a little quickie. First song was written that I had to write. This was just, I had to start the song before Kay was on board. The clock was ticking. We had just a few weeks. I'm just losing my mind.
I had the temerity to call a lawyer.
That's right.
And have a contract. You? Have a contract.
How dare you, girl? So I had to go. So this was is right here where I'm speaking, and I just had to get to it. It was not hard. It just sort of came to. Like I said, Bill and Dana provided me with a nice blueprint of what their a status report might be from these folks, and that one just came out. It was not hard at all. We Are One. A nightmare.
Yeah.
Satisfyingly tying up whole ships full of emotions gone rampant was not easy.
Yeah.
Just happen.
Mm. Okay. All right. If you say so.
Now, our last caller has a question to ask, but we did tell him we would play a little bit of a remix that he did of some of your music.
That
because
guy.
As soon
has
as,
been
yeah.
filling up our Discord and yeah. posting these on Twitter.
Yeah.
He
has been Which going guy, the though? Extra mile at least. So.
We put together a little medley.
Did I hear that right? Did she just shine a spotlight on her innermost feelings like it's no big deal? Say whatever, whenever you like.
Some advice from your senior number one. This I assure tried and true.
This news really That's my favorite. Changed.
Right, the, yes. The major.
The major one.
Yeah, amazing.
A distance
coming real.
That's so crazy how it goes to major so perfectly.
Yeah, that was the one where I think we both commented on that one on Insta or Twitter or whatever it was. I mean, I think I said, man, you managed to put a smile on that otherwise, sad, melancholy.
And you were like, thanks, right. I think,
yeah. Brilliant, my friend. Bravo.
All right, well, let's hear directly from the man himself.
Hello, Captain Idle here from Trek Time. I just want to say a big thank you to yourselves, Kay and Tom, for producing an amazing soundtrack for this amazing Stranger Worlds episode. And I just want to apologise profusely for bastardising your works with those reggae remixes I made, but it has brought me an immense amount of joy. That doesn't mean I'm going to stop, I'm going to make more, but I hope you enjoyed them as much as I've enjoyed making them, and I can't wait to see what you guys will do next, and I'm definitely going to be listening to a lot more of your past works as well. But my question is, if you could write songs and a musical for any other past legacy Star Trek show, what would you call the musical, and what would some of the track names be? Would there be a tango number between Picard and Crusher called Engage My Heart? Maybe a small saxophone number with Worf called Careless Honor's Whisper? Anyway, keep doing what you're doing. Love every minute of it. Thank you for everything you do, and I can't wait to hear what you're going to do next.
You're breaking free, not a possibility. A soul for wine, my computation, but miss vital information.
I mean, for Star Trek, I think Picard is screaming for a musical episode. And can you imagine Patrick Stewart? Probably has the most beautiful singing voice.
I bet you.
So to write song for like a British stage actor, oh my God, that would be amazing.
That's the right answer.
I really can't get farther than, I don't know if I can be clever or like obscure because I can't get past Patrick Stewart.
That's fully understandable. I don't think I could improvise on the spot like it, but I would say it's not one of the older iterations, but I think some musical numbers for Lower Decks just because it's an animation and we get to go even crazier from a genre perspective. go even more current and even more pop. And yes. You know, the thing with the, you know, Strange New Worlds is the beautiful score that Naomi creates is this huge lust symphonic thing. And both Kay and I, we were all, and you know, the discussions were such that it was important that the songs had that width and breadth sonically. So that, that's the why we chose to sort of orchestrate and instrumentalize, again, not a word, the songs with a full, with this big orchestra. But if we did Lower Decks, man, we would just go everywhere, you know. We just,
oh my God, like Cardi B instantly.
Yes, absolutely.
Nice. Yeah, I kind of want, I want a Lower Decks episode that's just like the progression of Disney stylings from Snow White to now.
Oh my God. Ooh. Well, that's a concept, damn, isn't it?
Well, I'm just going to put just throwing that it out in there. My notebook. Vision board.
Yes. Feel free.
That was pretty killer, bro.
I will gladly give you any of Cameron's ideas royalty.
Yeah.
Wait. What?
No problem.
I'm going to take a note from Kay and call my lawyer.
That's yeah. right.
What they say in songwriting, write a word, take a third.
That's right.
Ooh. I like that. Now, actually, that kind of rolls on into the hardest part of this show to say out loud. So let me see if I can channel producer John. Tom Pulce and Kay Hanley, Open Pike Night is an open mic night themed podcast. Did you bring with you a joke to tell our audience? Let's start with you, Kay.
Yes, I did.
Ooh.
This is my joke. What did the bra say to the hat at the end of a party?
What did the bra say to the hat at the end of a party?
You go on ahead, and I'll give these two a lift.
Oh, hey.
I like
really
it.
Good.
I've never heard
like
that. It. That's great.
Damn. It sounded like you were going to go filthy, and it didn't go completely filthy.
No, it's a kid's, it's a kid's yeah. joke.
That's so good.
It was actually a deleted line from the Doc McStuffins theme.
Yes.
No pressure, man.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so I'm going to just do a musician's joke because I'm a musician and I like this one. So way back, two cowboys descend back into a valley and they're chatting with each other. And in the distance, they hear these Comanche drums blazing. And one cowboy looks at the other cowboy. He's like, man, I don't like the sound of those drums. And from the distance, a chief yells, he's not our regular drummer.
Very nice.
Love it. That poor guy.
I got to be honest. I feel like you two may have put in the most effort to the joke segment of maybe any of our guests.
We're from New England. We're rule followers. It's like, if you tell us to do something, we will do it.
Yeah.
Man, I am very grateful. Tom, Kay, this has been so much fun for us. I gotta imagine it's been so much fun for our listeners. Thank you both so much for spending some time with us. We would be remiss if we didn't give you a little bit of space here to talk about what you have coming up next in your careers or anything else that you'd like to promote. This is your time to do that. Tom, let's start with you.
Well, I can't really talk about the things that are coming down the pike because they are seasonal. Wink, wink. Mm-hmm. And we have to wait for the sort of time of Jingle Bells to happen. But I've been busy scoring and writing music for something holiday inspired.
Santa!
Yes! Oh! Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks.
I didn't want to say anything, but I couldn't help it.
Kay, what have you got coming up? What should people know about in the world of Kay Hanley?
Well, I've my writing partners and I sold a show to Disney Junior.
Yay!
Which will be debuting next. We're like in the middle of production right now, and it's wonderful. It's called Kindergarten the Musical, and it will be out on Disney Junior next August. And Letters to Cleo shows in November in New York and Boston.
Not Portland, Oregon, huh?
No.
Nah.
I do love Portland.
Not this tour, Cam.
Well, thank you again so much.
Thank you for having us.
And yeah, I knew this was going to be a good conversation, and it blew expectations out of the water.
Yay.
So thank you so much.
Thanks. Well, you guys ask great questions.
And your listeners ask great questions and also have some pipes.
We do rely on them. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, guys, our episode for the musical episode, over half of the submissions were at least partially sung.
You inspired
so much singing on the show.
And I am so excited to have an episode of this podcast. What are we in, camera? Like 55, 60 episodes. And I finally have one that my wife is going to listen to. I am so excited to be able to offer that to her.
All 5 hours of it.
That's right.
Seriously. We're going to cut some stuff, but it's not going to be much. Let's hear it once more from the incomparable Lila.
Unbreakable, unshakable, untalkable, unstoppable. Sensational, inspirational, you are the enterprise.
Oh, I'm tearing up over
here. Oh my God, are you kidding me?
Lila. Thank you for sharing that, Lila. And you also have a great name. My daughter's name is Lila, too. Oh, that was
wonderful, cool.
Lila. Thank you. You sing so beautifully.
I am going to go watch this episode right now, you guys. Like, it's just, it's going to happen. There's no way that I can get away from it. I need another viewing. Thank you once again to Kay Hanley and Tom Pulci for spending some time with the Open Pike Night duet and giving us some good insight into the processes behind Subspace Rhapsody. Cameron, if the folks want to get a hold of you when you are not on the Open Pike Night stage, what should they do?
Yeah, if they want to come listen to me and John and some others talking about Star Trek The Next Generation and now DS9, you can listen to us over at Green Shirt and Newbie's Trek Through The Next Generation, where I am the Green Shirt watching TNG for the first time. Good stuff. Go listen to us over there.
And if you need to get a hold of Open Pike Night, the easiest way to do that is to just go to openpike.com. Everything you need is all in one place. And of course, you can follow the show on really, I think, any social media platform that you can think of at Open Pike. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Blue Sky, we're everywhere. Just go find us and listen to us.
Jesse, they're killing Google Podcasts, Google Pods. G-Pods?
They are.
I'm so sad. That's my place of choice, and they're taking it away.
I think it's called Podcast Addict. It's pretty fun. It lets me leave a review even if I don't have like an Apple account, for example. But yeah, definitely whatever your new podcast catching app is, make sure to subscribe to Open Pike Night.
All to say, I hope everything just transfers seamlessly to whatever YouTube podcast they're changing it to, but we'll make sure we're there once it happens.
Fingers crossed. Well, it's been a long night, and the OPN duet has a gig to get to, so make sure you clean up after yourself, tip your servers, and you can go anywhere you want, but you can't stay here.